Hello, this is Zsófi Terp, the feminist podcast of Partizan, an independent media channel in Hungary. My name is Zsófi Balog and my guests today are Noa Nógrádi and Anastasia Sokolova, and we will be discussing the death of M, the Japanese woman who was found dead in a house fire in her Budapest apartment on the 29th of January. M was a mother of two who had suffered the abuse of her ex-husband, who is currently under arrest and is suspected of premeditated murder. But Hungarian police first claimed that there were no signs of foul play and M's death was an accident. Only after the victim's friends and Hungarian women's rights organization Potent had started a media campaign did the police change their narrative and come up with new evidence that led to the arrest of the ex-husband. Stasia is a journalist, one of M's friends, and one of the active members of the campaign to bring justice in the case and to push for the police to complete the investigation with full attention to the history and details of the domestic violence that M has suffered. Noa is a regular guest on the podcast. She is a feminist activist and an expert on women's rights, who worked with several Hungarian women's rights NGOs. Our international listeners, welcome to Partizan's podcast channel. You can find out more about us on our YouTube or social media platforms. And if you can, please support our work through our Patreon. Welcome, Stasia. Welcome, Noa.
Hi.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Today is the 10th of February. The reason I say this, because between now and the publication of the podcast, maybe new news will come up. Just so everybody who listens has a clear picture of the events that unfolded. So, as I mentioned in the intro, 29th of January, it's a Wednesday. The police were called to a house fire in Budapest's 5th district midday, where they found the burned body of a woman. The ex-husband of the woman was the one who called them. He was at the apartment and he said that when he got there, the apartment was already on fire. He also said that he took the children to school that morning, and when he got back around 1 p.m., he noticed the fire. The police's first investigation included an on-site inspection, a medical examination of the victim's body, and dogs were called in to try to sniff out burning accelerators. And they concluded that there were no signs of foul play. And then on Saturday, the 1st of February, Potent Association puts out a Facebook post where they list the reasons why the police should investigate further and why her death is suspicious and foul play cannot be ruled out. And this is also when, Stasia, you and your community, the friends of the victim, started to push the police and question them why they don't investigate further.
And public, I would say. There was only one tool for us, it's to push public attention.
And then on Sunday, the 2nd of February, a police statement comes out. They still claim that there's no reason to suspect foul play. And on Monday, the 3rd of February, they shift their tone by the afternoon, only after a lot of pressure has come up on their social media channels. And on the 4th of February, Tuesday, there is a police press conference. They say that they found a new video evidence of the movement of the ex-husband that doesn't match what he was telling before. And a new medical examination takes place. This time they find signs of physical abuse. And maybe Stasia first, please introduce yourself and tell us what was your connection to M, how you knew her, and whatever you would like to add to the events.
Thank you, Zsófia. I'd like to add straight away that he was arrested.
Yes.
So at Tuesday, we learned at the press conference, we learned that Monday in late evening, he was arrested, which was a great, we got a relief on that. I met my friend, the victim of the murder, at 2018 at Hello Anyu Cafe, somewhere around Kiraya Utsa. It was quite, I think, famous place where moms of toddlers or even babies were spending time because it was a very friendly place. The kids could play without danger. And also moms were making their social connections. Of course, there were some Hungarians as well. I mean, Hungarians as well were there. But I would say more tight connection we made between foreigners, expat moms in Budapest, of course, obviously, because there were no other place. I mean, it's a new environment for us, and our lifestyle at that moment was not very, I mean, bar friendly or something. Yeah, so we met there, and quite quickly, the close circle matched. So this friend of mine was one of this close circle. I met quite very good friends there and from everywhere, Sweden, Finland, Americans, a lot. And so we hanging around for some time. And after my child turned two, we moved back to Russia, to Moscow with my husband, because we came here to Hungary because my husband is Hungarian. And spent here maternity leave. We were working remotely. I knew from other friends that my friend was suffering from a hard situation at home, but not deeply into the details. And then from 2022, when we moved back because of war in Ukraine, my family came back here. And I was very happy that Hungary let me be with my family and stay here. And so I met my friend at Olympia Park. It was the summer of 22, and she just she was always positive and smiling. It was very easy to be her friend because she was always asking you, how are you, what's up, and she was an amazing mom for all the kids around and her own as well. And so she just asked me, do I know your story so far? And I said, I just heard something, I kind of know, but what's up now? And then she told me quite horrific details, and I was really, shocked. That she told me all the story about that how they met with her husband in America when they were 20 or very young, and she told me that at this moment when we met, he already once he choked her while breastfeeding, the youngest child, they have two, and then he told her just, I don't want to be with you anymore, I don't want to live with you anymore, go away, because the apartment belonged to his parents, Americans. At that point she said, where should I go? Then Japan, and he said yes. So she thought, okay, she goes to Japan with both of the children and then things calm down, maybe he'll calm down and she will came back. But when she traveled, like almost on the way to the airport, as I understood, he said, no, you should leave one child with me. And she was so scared and desperate. So she took the only one child and went to Japan. But then he left one child here with some acquaintance and traveled, followed her to Japan, where he sued her as a kidnapping of the youngest child. And then she had a lawyer there and a family. Somehow she signed on the agreement that yes, she did wrong and she should came back with the child to stay in Hungary. And when I met her in the summer of 22, she told me that the situation now is that they are living together in the apartment belong to the husband. He has a girlfriend, but their marriage is still not cancelled, and he's bringing the girlfriend home. He has time with children without her, with the girlfriend. And she says she wants a divorce, but maybe they ask somewhere, and they ask some authorities how they can get a divorce, but because they're not citizen of Hungary and their marriage wasn't made here, they got an answer like, we don't know what to do with you because just you are not our people, something like this.
Because he is an Irish national?
Yes, yes.
She's Japanese?
She's Japanese national, he's an Irish citizen. Children were born in Brazil and children for sure, they have a Brazilian passport as well. The marriage was, I don't know where the marriage was made, maybe in Japan, maybe Brazil as well, but Japan for sure. She was kind of lost of how to get divorced. And so after this moment, we started to meet very often, particularly to discuss this. We became, like a little bureau of saving our friend and giving her advices and trying to get information for her. And at some other meetings, she said, yeah, my husband told me, let's go to Brazil to get divorced. And before she told us that one of his friend's wife disappeared in Brazil. And we said, please don't go to Brazil, because if you will disappear in Brazil, we will never find you there. And so we said, please, for sure, no divorce in Brazil. But at one day she said, oh, yeah. So my husband said he knows how to get divorce in Budapest. And they, as I understood, they got a divorce. She also contacted the Japanese embassy. And she also contacted her lawyer in Japan, as she told me, to get information. Maybe it's easier for her to get divorce in Japan. And as she told me, she got information that because of unfaithfulness of the husband during the marriage, she could easily get a divorce in Japan, but the custody is a question. But if she travels to Japan with both of her children, and then she will easily get a divorce because of the unfaithfulness in the marriage, and the custody will be hers. But if only she could travel to Japan with two children, which was impossible because the husband would never let her, and because of this Hague Convention, she already crossed, according to the lawyers. And she said never ever she will abandon the child here again, which she didn't abandon, but I mean, never ever she will be separated with her oldest child. Because current ex-husband at that time was telling everyone in the school and to the child that your mother left you. And so after she returned, she had a difficult time with the oldest child because he didn't understand why she left him. And he was, of course, upset. And he was, I think, damaged psychologically.
Thank you so much for all these details. It is a very complicated story, of course, because there are so many proceedings and...
Yes.
And so many ways she tried to get help and find information. As we said before, she filed not just one, but several police reports. She told the embassy, as you said, the school knew about the abuse. The friends knew about it. She was trying everything in her power, but he was really abusive and manipulative and manipulated the narrative about how she treats the children. He kept... If I'm correct, he kept one of the passports. That's how she ended up going with only one child to Japan at the time, because he, at the last minute, even though he agreed that she could go with both children...
In the beginning, yeah.
Yes, at the last minute, he changed his mind, kept the passport of one of the children, and that's how she could not leave with both of the children.
Let me add, if I may, that actually... I should say that the whole picture probably wasn't visible for everyone, just for us, friends, because as you mentioned school, I think that from what I know, from my point of view, maybe school didn't know the details about abuse, but definitely, first of all, they know about him being very, I would say, difficult person in terms of communication, because he was writing quite mean letters to teachers and added all teachers and parents in the CC of the letter. So, I mean, they knew he is like psychologically not... okay, so I don't think that the school saw the whole picture, but definitely there was so many red flags, obvious for the community.
Noah, can you please help us understand some of the legal and institutional background of this?
Maybe a few words first about the Hague Convention, because it's already come up. So this is an international convention, and it doesn't allow a parent to take a child or children out of a country without the consent of the other parent. So if they both have parental rights. So originally, the idea was supposed to be with this convention that fathers who are abusers couldn't use kidnapping the children to another country as a further weapon against the mother. So like a long while back, that the idea was that this will be good for this purpose. And in that time, women rarely traveled alone or with their children, either didn't even have a passport, but mainly didn't have the financial means to do so independently. Now there are more women who can travel, and so women started to sometimes try to escape abusive marriages into other countries with their children. And then suddenly it turned out that you can't really do this. So the Hague Convention actually became a tool in the hand of abusers. It is making it impossible to escape a country with children if you're an abused mother. Yeah, there is now an initiative to amend this convention and put into it a clause about domestic violence. I think that will be a very interesting to see if the international community and advocacy organizations manage to achieve this amendment. It would be huge and great. And also it will be interesting to see how will it be determined whether it is justified in a particular case to escape with the children without the consent of the other parent. Because obviously if it's up to local authorities to verify that it is indeed a case of domestic violence and that the escaping is justified, then, we wouldn't have anything differently if it would be the case now if the Hague Convention would have been already amended?
I'd like to add that in the case of my friend, the most, I think, crazy point was that when my friend came back and stayed here because she was forced to, and after they got a divorce, and the ex-husband moved to another country, mm-hmm. to Netherlands, and my friend, who is a Japanese with the children, with Irish and Brazilian passport, they all stayed in Hungary, which were not, I mean, they were kind of Hungarians already, the children, but I mean, why, if the ex-husband and the father is not living in this mm-hmm. country,
yeah.
and why they are without any Hungarian roots and possibility to work for mom, why she's supposed to stay here? And I mean, she couldn't, of course, he wanted her to travel with him to Netherlands, but as he was not providing and there was no home and no help, etc., of course, she was smart enough not to do it. But I mean, and still, she was obliged to stay in Hungary, yeah. even though the father left, who made her stay here. So this is yeah. such a crazy turn.
Yeah, it's great. It's very important what you're highlighting, I think, because should there be any kind of like international advocacy from this, this would be a very like promising case mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. prove how damaging this convention is, because a woman can be entrapped in a country that is not her own without the father residing in that country. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it is absolutely can be used as a tool for entrapment. And of course, like from an abuser perspective, this is an excellent situation. Like for him, this was an excellent situation because even though she made friends and he couldn't like be an overlord of her completely, given that he was also not even in the country. So he had some connections. But of course, she would have been less dependent on him if she was able to return to Japan. Now, the apartment that she was using was an apartment that didn't belong to her or her family.
And
so
he has
would
access.
Turn up.
And he has access.
Exactly. So he had access and he can turn up anytime.
Lakshmikarta was there and this was a huge mistake.
And I should add regarding the Hague Convention. So her attorney told me that...
Hungarian attorney.
The Hungarian mm-hmm. attorney who represented her in the guardianship authority cases told me that, first of all, it's not even the Hungarian authorities that are investigating, because the Hague Convention proceeding has to take place with the authority of the country that she's taking mm-hmm. the children to. So it was the Japanese authorities that had to be notified, or they yes. didn't have to be, but he notified the Japanese authorities. Mm-hmm. The authorities didn't even discover the yes. domestic abuse.
I think it's a big mystery till now, what happened in Japan. I think that Japanese, as far as I know, so I should say that I express a deep, deep condolences.
Condolences.
Mm-hmm. Condolences. I'd really like to express my deep condolences to family of my friend, the Japanese citizens, and the whole society in Japan, which I believe, as far as I know now, are really shocked of the situation. And I think that we will learn later. I'm sure that the society will now putting an effort to discover what happened there. Because I think that, I know very few details, but I think it's a big question how a Japanese nationality, being in her native country, probably as far as I know, she had a Japanese lawyer, could absolutely lose this in this situation. Of course, she had, she had a hostage in Hungary, yes? Because he left a hostage in a way. He left one son there as a hostage, and he traveled to Japan. It's a question who was taking care of a child, because what she told me, this is scary, but it should be checked. It should be investigated what actually happened in Japan and why the victim of domestic violence with a child left abroad as a hostage, she have not got any help and was not recognized as a victim of domestic violence in her native country.
I think that even though we know that that in Hungary there are very big issues, but I think what Stasia just said is very important, that this isn't a solved issue anywhere. So recognizing intimate partner violence, properly addressing it, properly going after it, is an issue in every country in the world, and Japan included. And it's an issue in international law to properly make sure that the international law cannot be abused in this kind of way. About the Hague Convention, there is lobbying going on, advocacy going on since quite a long time by mothers who have been put at risk or were damaged by how badly this convention is implemented and how women could even lose custody of their children fully to abusers because of a Hague procedure finding that they have abducted their own children. So then there is this Hague Mothers Alliance. And this is, I really recommend anyone who is interested in this and who would like to exert any kind of advocacy efforts in this direction to check out the website of this collective. And you will see also case studies that are absolutely mind-blowing. And as for the failures in the Hungarian system, basically, we have the exact same failures that we know from the science on violence against women that are general phenomena. It's they exist in every country, but I would say that in Hungary, we have them to the extreme. So, for example, the issue of the different areas of institutions existing as like separate planets, as Marianne Hester has called it. She is a proponent of trying to connect these planets together. So planets like the child custody and guardianship planet of institutions or authorities that deal with that issue, the criminal law planet that deals with like crime issues, and the civil or family law planet, which, you know, deals with divorce stuff and family law. Like these are, they don't communicate with each other. They don't inform one another properly. And this exists to the absolute extreme in Hungary. So,
and even on their own planets, they don't investigate properly.
Yeah, of course, even in their own planets, and they don't consider the other aspects very much. And we tend to think about domestic violence or intimate partner violence as a matter of criminal law, which doesn't completely coincide with the realities of victims and survivors of domestic violence, because their main motivation is very often not to pursue justice in a criminal justice sense, it's just to be safe with their children. And often cases come out or situations come out, not even in the criminal law planet, but in the guardianship planet. Once there was a divorce and they are just wanting to have their children safe. But that planet is not dealing at all appropriately with the fact when you know, background information about abuse comes out. Because why was there no conclusive criminal case about that? Which very often there isn't, either because the victim at that point didn't want to pursue criminal justice against the father of her children, or because it was simply not taken into consideration at all, as we have also seen in this case. Because, you know, victims do get desperate enough, usually not out of vindictiveness, which is a myth that is very strong in society, that, you know, there are these angry women, angry wives who, I don't know, their husband left them and then they...
Or they play on their weakness.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they just want revenge by taking the kids and all that.
Yeah, so there is this idea of the vindictive woman and stuff like this. And this is so far from the reality, because in reality, there are a lot of victims, much more than you can see in the criminal statistics, for example. And those victims, when they do go to the police, it is much less done out of vindictiveness or seeking justice or stuff like this than just out of pure fear. Like when they go there, it's just because, okay, at this point, I'm out of tools, I'm out of options. And
desperation.
And then they don't get the response that they ought to get there, proper investigation, proper convictions. And then if this comes up in the child custody hearings, then they will say, oh, but there wasn't any conclusive evidence of domestic violence. So this is, of course, a woman who is trying to play on the mm-hmm. victim narrative mm-hmm. and who is this vindictive woman. There was like no conclusion about this and so on. And so they are painted as bad women or mean women, bad mothers who are like training their children against the father and so on and so forth very, very often. So there is this like three planets issue, three or even more planets, because there are several institutions involved without like having a concerted effort. I will just as a footnote, I will mention, for example, that since the European Victim Directive, which is a European legal instrument, there is such a thing as special victim status for women who became victims of intimate partner violence or sexual violence. So these kind of more more sensitive, more loaded types of crime. The authorities ought to recognize that this is a type of situation that they should give the victim this status, which gives you some further rights. For example, that you don't have to repeat your testimony multiple times. It's enough to describe once what happened, and that will be recorded. And so on. There are various things related to that. And then, of course, once one authority figure or authority participant has, state agent has recognized this, they should pass the information on to the other state agents. And this is not happening. And we know this firsthand. Even myself, I've talked in the past with members of the police who are saying that, but the data protection doesn't make it possible for us to notify the court that this victim is a special victim. It's like we file that file away. I'm just giving it as one example.
It's
as
just
one
a dead end. I mean, we are just facing the dead end.
Yeah. So you know, there are guidelines and protocols about recognizing that someone is deserving of special victim treatment. And then there is not mechanisms in place that this information reaches all the authorities who will be involved in that type of case. So there is that issue. And then there is the issue of lack of training, which is very emphasized now. But I like to add to it that, you know, training is not enough. Like training, what training? What is the content of that training? How long is that training? How closely it is followed up? That officers act according to that training.
Noah, do you refer to actually the request from the patent organization that after this case of my friend, the police should get the training, yeah?
There is a petition now.
Do you refer to that petition that training is not enough, yes? I mean, you refer the training that was requested and you're saying that just training is not enough.
I'm saying that just training is not enough.
I mean, related to
I mean, we have been demanding, that the women's organizations in Hungary, since a long time, we have been demanding or like calling on the state and on authorities to make training compulsory about this and to integrate this into the base training of all authorities. There were, you know, trainings held by these organizations as well, not only to police officers, but to judges, for example, once upon a time, you know, and there are like sporadically, there are requests, as far as I know, from different district police headquarters and different towns to get the training. But the thing is that such a systematic training would be needed, like a 1 weekend thing is just not going to be enough. And that's the sad truth. Like we all want a quick fix. It would be amazing, but it's not the kind of thing of like, you sit in a 1 weekend thing, you take the, I don't know, there are so many pills on the internet now, red pill, black pill, all kinds of pills. Can't take the purple pill and suddenly be able to address well this topic. It is a very systematic
compassion
thing.
Pill. Is there a compassion pill?
Yeah.
They could at least take
that. Yes.
Okay, sorry to bring it back a little bit to the recent developments of M's case, because you were talking about the Hague Convention proceeding that was way back in 2020, if I'm correct, around that time.
Yeah.
So we come up to 2023, and this information I will share now is based on my interview with her attorney. So March 2023, their divorce was finalized. They agreed on a shared child care. So she takes the kids 1 week, he takes the kids 1 week. But after about a month, he moves away to another country, the Netherlands, as you mentioned.
His new wife.
Has a new wife very, very quickly. He also didn't give his consent for both of the children to attend the same school. So even the guardianship authority had to rule in that case. They actually side with her and state that she can take the second child to the same school as the first child is going to.
So in this Budapest.
Budapest. Yeah. So this is another way he tries to make her life difficult and just to make it impossible for her to, you know.
Yes, and he said, I'm not going to sign this transfer of the child to another school for them to be in the same school because I want, if you have a shitty life or the child has a shitty life or shitty school, it's more chances you join me in another country. But I should also mention that when we say he wanted her to follow him, but you should understand that he have not suggested her where she would live, what money she can use, because she was not giving money to her. So basically, her picture of moving there was, is she supposed to live with his new family in one apartment? Or, you know, she, at least here, children speak Hungarian and go attend school and they have an apartment. But there, they don't speak Dutch, they don't have an apartment, she doesn't have any income there. Why would she do that?
Right. And so the second time the guardianship authority is involved is to fight for her to be able to go back to Japan. Mm-hmm. Apparently at that time he took all the passports of the children, so she couldn't even, you know, leave if she wanted to with them. And they mandated, the guardianship authority mandates them to attend mediation, which is also, of course, very dangerous in the case of domestic violence. But in any case, they attend the mediation. It results in a partial agreement, and this is last summer, 2024. He still didn't consent for the children to leave to Japan with her, but he says that if the guardianship authority rules that they allow it, then he lists a bunch of conditions on how he would agree to stay in contact with the children. She agrees to his conditions. And so she waits for the guardianship authority to decide. September last year, 2024, instead of approving this agreement, instead of making it official, they mandate that the children go under a psychological examination by a forensic psychologist, and the psychologist gives an appointment to March 2025. Yes. So this is another insane detail. So it takes a very, very long time. So altogether, this whole procedure of the guardianship authority, the mediation, the psychological examination, it would have taken 1 year. So she would have waited a long, long time.
That was her dream. She was saying, I close my eyes and I dream I'm back to Japan with my children. But she got a life threat, absolutely scary letter in November. And, you know, when you have this scary letter in November and you attend police with that and you are declined and you got a psychological test for March, I think you are very scary.
Thanks for bringing up the letter. So this is when she files a police report for the second time. And this is in November 2024.
In November, she got a very scary letter. It was a moment. Usually we had the chat. Me, other friend of ours, Finnish lady, and our Japanese friend, we had the chat for three of us where she gave us the updated info. And, you know, she was doing it with several people because after her experience in Japan, when basically she had no evidences of domestic violence abuse, she was told by the lawyer, as I think, and also we told her that she should keep all the evidences and spread it to us because we knew, she told us that he's somehow some kind of hacker, so she was afraid to keep all the evidences on her laptop, which was stolen later by him, as she stated. So we all got her update from her, not because we were worried, but also because she wanted to put evidences everywhere he would not reach. That was the first time, I think, in November when she not just wrote, but she called us. So I just got, you know, in the middle of the morning, I got a video call shared and I pick up from her. So it was three of us on the video call and she was very scared because she got this letter. She forwarded us, not forwarded, but copied it. And the letter was like, you will got, it's a nuclear war you declared on me because you got very bad advice from your lawyer and you are acting upon the law, but you are not considering my reaction and I am pissed off. And he said that she got a terrible death, etc. So she was very scared. She called us and we immediately, of course, we said, go to police straight away, call your lawyer. This is absolutely terrible life threat. And she said, yes, I will. And of course, after this conversation, I was so sure that, you know, police would act. She would be protected. She would got the status of a person in danger. Then after several days, we got a message from her. And she said he's coming or something like this. When he arrived, she said, after that, she wrote us, like, girls, I'm still alive. And of course, emojis, because she tried to be positive. And, you know, she didn't want to be, you know, like, oh, girls, that's me, your friend who is crying and scared. No, she was always like, how are you doing? Let's go meet, have coffee. So she was positive. But at that point, you know, she wrote this terrible lines that I'm still alive, girls, and like lovely emojis. And so he traveled there several times after that, or one at least for Christmas. And every time she was very worried.
Because he's living in the Netherlands.
Yes, and he's visiting.
He shows up in Budapest in the apartment sometimes, usually yes. Without notice.
Yes, he was telling it to the children, but not to her, as I understood. So, I mean, I feel so so down and ashamed that I did not really contacted her as often as I should in November and December. So we've been in touch. She was writing, but I mean, I think we still were able to help. We would be able to help if we would know. She didn't tell us. She didn't wrote us that police declined her application.
So let's talk about the police reports. You mentioned about the stolen laptop. So the first time she files a report is August last year. And she says, my laptop was stolen by my ex-husband, and they don't mm-hmm. believe her. They say that there's no evidence that it yeah. was him. So
they said, we don't know how it disappeared from your apartment.
And then they also tell her that, by the way, you don't have to come in to the police. This is according to her attorney, what she said, that you can just send an email to us mm-hmm. and then we will investigate. So apparently she sent several emails between August and November, the two filings, but they never investigated any of this. And the police only actually claim that they know about the November police complaint. This is also very strange that they just don't seem to have an information of the previous.
Well, I hope your laptop or your emails is investigated as well. And
yes.
We can see what kind of emails she sent.
Yeah. But actually, let's talk about the arrogance of the police, because I think that's another very important subject here. So as Noah mentioned, you know, training is not enough. You were kind of joking about the compassion pill. But really, what was your experience? What was your knowledge of how the police treated her?
I just got one message from her where she says, I'm afraid they would not act unless I'm not covered in blood. So I can't say that she like complained to me personally about police. And she haven't wrote us that they declined her complaint. But that's what she wrote to me, that I'm afraid I needed to be covered in blood for them to act. And when she is dead, the police said it's an accident connected to smoking. But she was like a monk, she never smoked. So that was, for me, a huge shock as well, that when a person who was non-smoker and even filed to police the life threat from her ex-husband, and he is allowed to leave the police department after being questioned about her sudden death in the middle of the day because of the cigarette she never smoked.
And some of the people who knew her were commenting on the police's Facebook
yes.
posts. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I think maybe I should say some words about us. Yeah, so us is actually a friend of her who united in a group on WhatsApp, just chaotically, you know, one invited each other. I personally learned about her death Friday, and I joined that group. And when the police Sunday, so it was a weekend, and of course nothing is happening in the breaks in the official field, and no questions could be answered, etc. So we just started to collect evidences, what she told whom, what was her story last days, etc. And then suddenly we've seen the post on the Facebook group of the 5th District Police Department when they said something like, calm down, people. We believe it's an accident. cost of smoking, but investigation of this incident is still on. But we were confused because I'm not Hungarian, so we were confused if the investigation is still on or it's closed in a way. And a lot of commenters, whom we don't know, came claiming, yeah, Csaba Bacsi died because of smoking as well. My neighbor died like this. Yeah, it's a common thing.
Oh, God.
And at that point, one of our friends said there, commented like she never smoked. And I think police department answered her, why do you know? And then I remember me saying in our group that please, everybody who's, because some of us are remote, already left the Hungary, some of us are here. And I said, please, those who are remote and who can't act here, please just write that you personally knew her. Tell your name, tell that you knew her in person and you witnessed she never smoked. So you're not just a random Facebook discusser from about your Csaba or nanny, yeah, but you personally knew the victim. And they started to comment, and I think that changed the narrative in a way, because if you leave these comments like this, we know, I mean, I'm Russian, I know how manipulative could be the trolls in Facebook. I mean, no offense to the real Csabas. But, you know, as I knew that the ex-husband is a hacker in a way, I'm really like, you know, my mind was constructing the pictures where he was programming it in advance for, because he was still free at that point, according to our information. So we really were scared that he's crossing the street somewhere near us and also, you know, inviting some, I don't know, fake accounts to comment and change the narrative to this is like a common situation caused by smoking. So can you imagine how scared we were? And also, that's why, like, for example, I gave an interview Sunday with, not my real name for TV, because I was very scared. I thought, okay, if I even ask them to change my face, I mean, erase my face, it would be, it look less real for the public. So at least, okay, you can keep my name, not my face, but not my name. So that's how scared we were that he's somewhere near us with the guns, because even police knew he had guns.
I think there is a very nearly inexistent system of accountability in Hungary for failures on part of state authorities when they result in death like this. And that's something that next to the training is very important to have, because oftentimes they would have very deeply ingrained sexist beliefs, victim-blaming attitudes. They themselves might be perpetrators of violence against women, you know, police officers. It reminds me, there was a case in France not long ago where a woman's police report wasn't taken in by the officer who himself was reported for domestic violence. And there was a, you know, yeah. It is an incompatibility of roles. So you shouldn't be in that position in that case. Anyway, what accountability mechanisms can do is they can force police officers and anybody acting in the name of the state to act with due diligence and to adhere to the laws in investigating serious threats like this, even if they don't want to believe a victim. Like, regardless of their personal attitude, regardless of their personal preferences, arguments, does this officer think that women are all lying whores? It doesn't matter. If they don't go after it and it results in a death like this, then they should count with consequences. And this should be something instated. And to me, it is absolutely abhorrent that to this point, we only heard of investigation going into why her report was rejected in November. That's the absolute bare minimum. There should also be an investigation about why was it announced that they ruled out homicide. Are they trying to sell it to us? That in fact, they were quietly investigating, they just said it outwards. What is the story here? But to me, it seemed from the press release of the police after that they actually did start to investigate only after the outrage, like properly investigate it. It seems to me. And in that case, this merits a very thorough investigation again within the police itself and accountability, because they could have let a murderer run free if that's the case, right?
With the guns.
With guns, yeah. A murderer who has guns.
Why we are mentioning the guns is because he kept, I know at least about one gun that he kept in the apartment, and she was terrified that he would use it at some point. But what else do we know about his weapons and
So at his Instagram account, he showed that he's a fan of shooting. So he attends the shooting facilities. He was photographing children, his small children near guns, saying like guns and is fun, something like this. Yeah. So he was shared his calibers, etc. He stored weapon at home. But can I add something to what Noah is saying? I really hope that not just the murderer will be found and got his sentence, but also others who could have saved the person in this particular situation and in the future. It will be really, it's just for national sake.
Absolutely. And the thing is here that it is even an even higher offense what they are making, because those police officers were in a unique position to act. Because that's something that nobody else in society can do. You couldn't do it.
Yes.
It is against the law for us
to act,
for private citizens to act in that kind of case. They are in the only unique position that it is not only in their authority to act, but it is also their obligation to act. And neglecting that responsibility and thereby basically giving free permission for someone to realize exactly the threat that he was writing in that threatening letter, because he spent a long time in that apartment according to those recordings, and it pains me to point it out.
What he was doing there.
Why did it take so long? And he did promise that it will be, you know, pain that he will give to her. And they allowed it to happen when they were in the only position that could have intervened and prevented it from happening. Yeah.
Yes, you have a special responsibility that you, and you can act on it. And here's a man who is armed. Here's a man who is abusive.
Almost 2 meters. Hey.
Here's a man who is known to have choked her, who sends death threats, who is controlling her in every way he can. So what the fuck? In a way, the reason I mentioned their arrogance is the way they communicated, even in the Facebook comments, even in the press conference. There is this certain kind of arrogance and smugness with which they communicate to the public, to the victims' community. I mean, this is a personal rant, but how soulless and inhumane can you be? I don't care if you're the press officer. I don't care if you're the officer when she goes in there to say that her laptop was stolen. What kind of person do you have to be? And I know this is a social issue. I know we can analyze all the systematic problems. But for fuck's sake, you see a woman who brings you evidence, you're a police officer, or you're an officer whose responsibility is to communicate with the public.
I would like to add 2 points. First, I would just really, I'm picturing this. Can you imagine? My friend is a tiny woman. You know, she is like this Japanese, as you can imagine, like quite, I would say, short and very pretty. She had a really babyish face, beautiful face, and she was 40, but she looked like, you know, a teenager in a way. And can you imagine when she comes with a beautiful smile, when such a lady comes to police department with a life threat letter where she's suggested with a painful death, and she, you know, she was very humble, and you, in her tender voice, is asking you for help. And you see that she can't stand for herself. She looked really like, you know, like a young lady. I mean, no one should stay ignorant to that, especially if it's, you know, 5th District Police Department. I mean, close by, next door, children maybe in the same playground. This is the first picture. I really see how she would come. Because she never, you know, I mean, we can be very vocal, being a journalist, etc. But she was not, and she already, if such a person is asking you for help, it means he's really desperate. This is the first picture I want just you to imagine. But second, I mean, I will be quite opposite from what you just said about police, because I'm Russian, yeah? And for me, what happened here, I mean, in terms of police, I really appreciated this excuse me video what they launched, because after this very shocking communication on Facebook page about calm down people, it's just a smoke accident. And I mean, after that, and the press conference was quite weird, I should say, but I mean, what
when they mentioned that he was a great father,
I don't need a suspense on a press conference. I mean, yeah. I was there actually at the press conference, yeah. Because I'm a journalist, and for first 10 minutes I was sitting there. I thought I'm gonna, you know, just start to cry, because it was, you know, 10 minutes I was sure that they will say case closed, solved. Anyway, so I'm not talking about this now, but as a Russian in now my country, police not just not apologize but do more things, hard things. But here I'm really appreciated first that they apologize. This is a lot. It means that such a situation is not normalized on the level of police authorities, and thank you very much for that. And also I want to say that it's very important for them to understand it, and I'm very grateful for these police officers who are investigating this case. And in a way, I agree with a journalist from Telex, Andras, who said that it took days for real autopsy of the body to see what happened to the body after the burn. So I really think that part of police really were too quick to make such a statement, because the body autopsy needs some time. And I mean, maybe it's my brain who wants to believe in a better. But actually what I've seen for the past days in Hungary really gives me hope that it's not normal here to ignorant for little woman in danger, in trouble. Of course, it's definitely too late for her children and for this pure flower who is killed. But I mean, for the society, it's not too late. So people here are really caring, and they, even the authorities, it's not normal for authorities. And I hope they will hear us. They will hear you, Noah, you, Zofia. They will hear and they will change.
And I would just like to add that this is thanks to you. I mean, your community.
Mm-hmm.
This is thanks to the pressure that you put on them. And maybe they came out with some kind of apology. I'm more cynical and whatever. It doesn't matter what my opinion is. I just think that it was thanks to the power of your community and the pressure that you put on them that they actually had to come out and have that press conference and look into that case more. And I'm happy they are doing it. I am happy they arrested him. I'm very, very glad that he's not on the streets. And I'm really hoping that it will be a very, very serious investigation and that he will be held accountable.
Noah? I will pass your words to the girls. So, because it's a female community, not of only of those who are friends of our friend, but I think I felt so much of support and actions from other females. So, and not just females, actually, there were so many men. And our aim is not to make it, you know, a case like mothers against fathers. No, it's those who are killing against those who want to be safe. That's all. Thank you very much. And I want to add that we are collecting money for children of my friend, and also we will unite our forces with Patent and other female organizations who are raising their voices for making this not possible in the future with other women and ladies like my friend.
Noah, anything you would like to add?
Well, I'm also unfortunately a bit more cynical. But that's because of the, as they also said, you know, the years of experience and intuition. To quote the press release of the police, I agree with Rofi that this is because of you. The thing is, the biggest changes in the past years in Hungarian legislation and approach to this topic were always due to some big fuck up. Either a big fuck up in terms of a politician saying something in parliament that was extremely harsh against women, or a case that came to light and that was extremely harsh. And that was harsh enough to push the button in many people within the public. And so there was a public outrage which forced them to react or issue something. And in a way, that can be like the only, you know, positive consequence of horrible cases like this, that they can galvanize change, because let's state the obvious, okay? Violence against women and children as well is extremely normalized in society. Various shades of it are extremely normalized. So something that is very extreme has to happen for people to snap out of the normalization and be like, okay, that's beyond, like way beyond the line. And this situation is way beyond the line. And I saw outrage, you know, much more expressed, not only on part of the community who was directly impacted, but in the general public as well, about the way that the police was communicating and about when it turned out that she wasn't a smoker. People read that and they piled on with their outrage. And I think that it left no other way but to issue an apology in the end. To me, you know, my cynicism is further supported by, you know, on the press conference, if I remember well, there were comments to the effect of this man having been a good father. Mm. You know, a good father doesn't murder the mother of his children. There is that small fact that has been overlooked. So to be able to say that statement has to mean that you don't fully appreciate and understand what this is about. So I question the deep conviction. But it doesn't matter whether there is deep conviction. What matters is to keep public pressure for justice and to keep trying to advocate so that this doesn't happen to another woman, that very obvious risks and threatening is left out of consideration. There are some really good risk assessment tools available, both in Hungarian and in English, and I'm very happy to give links. So Zsófi, if you want, you can put it in comment under this episode or anything like that. That I think that this is, you know, a top priority, because we didn't talk about what training should encompass, like what exactly it is. And we talked a bit more about attitudes now than about actual protocol. And we talked a bit about laws, so that the actual officer should know what laws apply to them and actually implement those laws in reality, which is not happening. But another the important element of training is proper risk assessment and safety plans in case there is enough boxes ticked that is a clear risk. And you know, in this case, there are many boxes ticked.
Yeah, I think, let me just interrupt. When Noah, I think, if I'm right, saying not normalizing the aggression against women, we are saying about that the first murder of a woman in Hungary happened like 10th of January. So there are murders. I want everybody, especially in authorities, let's not agree on the statement that it's just a single case or this such a like outrage, it's just one case situation. No. Mm-hmm. And also, for example, okay, if here would be like, domestic violence notice where the victim, when they checked these boxes with my friend, that, yeah, she's in a real current danger. And then, you know, they break all the regular timetables or roadmaps and they start this emergency roadmap where she got the ex-husband and her come to court in 48 hours after the life threat is made. And so it's not about like waiting for psychologists for March or yes, it's a weekend, so the police department is closed and or, you know, come tomorrow. No, it should be emergency and evacuation immediately in 48 hours, because the life is so precious that it's better to be overreacting than underestimating. So I really believe that it's about preciousness of life.
And I keep thinking about, you know, it's always a murder when we pay a bit of attention. I mean, society wakes up a little bit, but...
Or not. I mean,
there are women
even smoking in bed.
There are women in danger every single day.
Yeah.
Today, maybe in this country, someone is trying really hard for the police to get them seriously, to take them seriously, or they try to reach the guardianship authority. There's an abused woman somewhere who tries to really, tries everything in her power to stay safe or look for help. And maybe it's not as a serious case like an armed man who is sending death threats, but there is coercive control, there is abuse, there is
sexual violence,
there is abusive behavior that can be checked, that can be looked into, and that can be taken seriously. And of course, if you're not even a Hungarian who tries to get help, I mean, even Hungarian women barely get real help, but if you're a foreigner, you have the extra difficulty to get them to find someone who speak English in the freaking police station, or to just take the case seriously if it's a bit more difficult than usual because you have different nationalities involved. It's costly. It's complicated to look into it. It's not easy for them. It doesn't result in a open and shut, simple case, an investigation that will go smoothly. But it doesn't matter. These women who are mothers, who fight custody cases, who are being held hostage because the abuser will use the children in any way they can, and they will use the procedures and the legal tools and the loopholes and everything that they can to keep the mother in control, even without now every police station having a training on domestic violence. There are tools, there is information available. There are the women's rights organizations who put this out there in the past 30 fucking years. We shouldn't be so surprised on what to do in cases like this. I'm just always astonished that there has to be a murder case when people start to wake up like, oh my God, what should we do? We know what to fucking do. Yes. We have to take women seriously. That's what we should fucking do when they are in danger. Yeah.
And that's, by the way, that's what I meant more by the normalization of violence. Mm-hmm. You know, there is extensive scientific literature on this, how deeply embedded violence against women is in society in general. And part of this is the idea that women are unbelievable, like that you cannot believe the word of a woman. She must be lying or exaggerating, or she's paranoid. Even if she is saying the truth, then it's not such a big deal. It was probably both of them had a conflict. She is overreacting and so on. Like all those attitudes, which are about minimizing, legitimizing, dismissing the aggression against women, or the normalization of violence that is very direct as well. And I don't want to take it into that direction that much, but the fact, you know, strangulation or choking is a tool that many abusers use. Mm-hmm. It's literally, you can't breathe, translated into action. You know, I suffocate your life and I suffocate you. It is a very common strategy employed by abusers. And choking women is now considered a sexy thing in our society. This is considered how hot. Yes. And women with all kinds of tight stuff around their neck are on billboards. You know, and this is just, you know, one sliver I'm trying to illustrate with how we are walking in the world, which shows us that violence against women can be pleasurable, glamorous, beautiful, desirable, and so on. And this is a most like progressive normalization of violence against women that we are seeing. But it's just one element, and that's what I mean by the normalization of all those stereotypes and prejudices and expectations about a woman in a relationship and a man in a relationship. And come on, you know, he's like, he's so possessive. He's so jealous because he loves you so much. Mm-hmm. And so on. All those things. And the problem is that even people in a position of authority are hanging on to that approach, or can be hanging on to that approach, when it would be their job to let go of that approach. If a woman is saying that my laptop was stolen by my husband, for example, a woman is saying that, and then when the police says, we can't know who it was who stole this laptop, when the woman is saying, I'm telling you who it was, it's the person that has access, keys to my apartment and access to my laptop, what is behind this other than women cannot be believed? Women are just making shit up, right? You have to think that women are liars. If you do not go after that. I've also seen arguments saying that the police are also underpaid, they don't have enough hours to do their job, they, you know, the basically it's under-resourced and things like this, and that's part of this problem or why such failures occur. I think that it can be to some degree yes part of the problem, but at the same time it's such a basic obligation to launch an investigation when someone is showing a clear threat to life. To me, the under-resourcedness or the lack of proper support to the workers is not enough to to take that responsibility away.
Can I add that I think if it's really, I have a feeling that of course Hungary is not like Germany or some in terms of economical situation, but I think this is a basic thing for any country. You should have enough police workers. You should, as a government, you should do what is necessary to protect people. If it's understaffed, change it. I mean, this is more important than the trolley fixing, yeah. More important than a Christmas tree.
I mean, just this argument, the reason I cannot take it seriously also is because if it would be any other crime, if it would be a shooting on the street, we would never say this. Like, oh my God, poor police didn't investigate properly because they are understaffed. We would still demand that the person who was shot would be investigated, who shot him, who was responsible. Yeah. I just feel like whenever it's a woman's life or violence against women, we always find as a gut reaction any kind of justification and going around it and somehow minimizing the responsibility of the...
No, sorry.
I don't care if it's understaffed. I'm just so tired of always making these disclaimers. This is a person's life that was lost. I'm tired of these fucking justifications. It just has to be taken seriously. It's just the duty of the entire point of the police. Of course, we are in partisan. We can go into another time how the police is not there to protect the public, but to protect the right of the state to control the public. That's a whole entire discussion. But we still have laws. We still have some sort of democracy here. We still have laws that we can follow. We still have the police directive to follow. So they just have to do that. And if you don't want to end on my personal rant, you can still add some last words, but we are running out of time, so...
Okay. There are other things that I could add, which I won't. I just want to ask instead, Stasia, how is your group now? How are the friends now?
I think that we just finished that all preparations for the memorial at the vigil event, and then also a co-hosted event with the patent at the parliament. So I don't know. We just have it's maybe first day when we just can have some rest. Mm-hmm. And also we are, a part of us is still working on this online donation be possible. Yeah, so I think that in a way...
For the children?
For the children, mm-hmm. yes, for the children. We are collecting money for the children. And I think that now it's just a couple of days for rest, and then we will check upon each other's status. We're not going to stop, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for coming, Stasia and Noah. I think it was a very important discussion, and I know that it must be really hard to day and night think about this. And I'm sure many of you are grieving, but your community is really amazing. It's really... Yeah, just
I'll pass that to the girls. Thank you.
And sorry, and not just amazing because of what you achieved by alerting the public, but also because it's one of the first times in Hungary that those close to someone who was killed in this decide to talk about her and show her personhood. And I think it is so, so important that the public sees that she was a three-dimensional, full person with friends, with hobbies and things she liked to do. And she had a particular style of chat messaging. And I think it's so beautiful that you and your friends talk about her in all her...
Thank you very much.
...her things and not just, you know, not just the victimhood part of her.
And may I thank you very much, Noah. Then I'd like to add, I have a dream now. I don't know if it will be shared by the others, but that we would have a tree at the Olympia Park. There would be a new tree with a table named by my friend, by her full name. And so it will be her always there because that was her spot when we gathered. And one day her children will grow up and they will have questions and they will be able to come there and hug the tree. And she will be there. So the story would not be somewhere in the internet or somewhere, but it will be physical visible and available for them any moment. I'd like it to be happen, and I will be happy if you will support me in that.
Absolutely, that's a beautiful plan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.